This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com on this fourth day of February 2011, and today I am talking to our monthly guest, Bob Chapman of the InternationalForecaster.com. Bob Chapman, it is always a pleasure to have you on the program, so thank you once again for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule to talk with us.
It is my pleasure to do so. As you know, this is one of my favorite programs. And now that we've been told by that rodent from Pennsylvania that next month spring is going to begin, I'm happy about that.
For a moment, I thought you were going to be referring to some political person, but okay, Groundhog Day. Well, actually, yeah, in Japan, I kind of forgot about the existence of Groundhog Day, but interesting. Well, on a much more serious note, there have been some, of course, extremely serious things going on the international scene, the geopolitical scene, and of course, we're talking about North Africa, we're talking about Egypt, and there's been protests, as many people know, that are threatening to destabilize the Mubarak dictatorship, which of course has been propped up through U.S. aid for decades, and it now seems to be coming to perhaps an end as the protests ratchet up and things get even more tumultuous in Egypt. So, Bob Chapman, tell us your take on what's happening there, how we got to this point, and where we're headed.
Well, first of all of the Middle East states are client states of Great Britain and the United States to some extent. I think that the British and the Americans got together, and I think they decided that, and of course this is all guesswork, that they needed a distraction from the terrible financial problems that exist in the municipal markets of the United States, the funding of the Treasury debt by the Federal Reserve, and the interplay between the Fed and the central banks in Europe, the problems that have arisen among six countries within the EU. So I think they wanted to get people looking in a different direction, and they've accomplished that. Now, the sacrifice was Mubarak, who has been a client, if you may, an employee of the people who run things in the city of London and on Wall Street. And they decided it was time for him to go in order to accomplish this. The Muslim Brotherhood has also been financed by the CIA and MI6, as was the Taliban at one time, and maybe still, as well as Osman bin Laden, who I started to write about in 1988. So I think this was a staged event, both in Tunisia as well as in Egypt. I think the mistake that they made is that they thought the people would uprise and go against the military and police, and there would be a great revolution going on, and that hasn't happened. And I think, you know, they should have considered the fact that in Egypt, nobody has any weapons except the military and the police. So it's pretty
and
hard.
And where did those weapons come from?
The police and military weapons came from the United States and Britain.
Exactly.
And they would give them the money to come back and purchase them. hundreds of billions of dollars. Israel is included in that. And, of course, we have, in America, people living under bridges and in tents in extremely cold weather, dying of exposure, and our government's giving money away to keep the industrial complex going so that more people won't get laid off and more profits won't be lost in regard to weapons which end up killing people. Anyway, that's what I think they attempted to do, and they even had Mubarak have his goons go out and throw firebombs and attack people who were demonstrating peacefully. maybe vocally, but they were peaceful. And the demonstrators got along very well with the police and the military. There were very few clashes when you consider 5 million people were involved on the streets at one time or another. The Million Man March was 4 million people, irrespective of what your media is telling you in the West. And so then the question is, what happened in the surrounding areas? Well, Yemen, the dictator, friend of America and Britain, he said he's not going to run again. And he's either, neither is anybody in his family. In Jordan, they, the king, and I put that in quotes, he, and get rid of his, we'll call him vice president, and is going to change his cabinet. Of course, that's cosmetic. He does everything that he does because he's told to do it. So he's just a puppet. I don't see any signs of the unrest at this time spreading anyplace else, but I do believe that as time goes on and food prices go higher and inflation goes higher worldwide, that you're going to see more disruptions. And eventually, I think there'll be many revolutions in many countries. And I've been saying this for a long time, because people are listening to the Corbett Report and other reports like that, and they're on the internet, and they have found out what's going on. They now know who is doing what to them and why it's being done. And they certainly don't like it very much. And that leads to revolution, because the same kind of cast of characters is available to them running their countries that is running Egypt or Tunisia or the United States or Great Britain and so on. Some people will say, well, this will spread to Europe and the United States eventually. I don't think it will be direct the result of what went on in the Middle East. I think it will be because the world economy will continue to slow down. Inflation will come, maybe even hyperinflation. And that will be followed by a deflationary depression. And that is going to happen. So there are going to be disruptions just about everywhere. And they will vary in velocity and ferocity. And some governments will come down without a shot being fired. Other governments, it won't be as nice. What will happen is that lots of people will die. And so that's where we're headed, generally speaking. But this is an incremental part of what's going on. I mean, they make Egypt look like a big deal. There's only 80 million people there. In the scheme of things, that's not large. I mean, Mexico is 100 million. We have a little over 300 million. And so you can, you know, you can see the differences. And, of course, China's the big one. And sooner or later, they'll have their problems, too. They're not immune, and they get as many problems as every other country has. And so I don't immediately see any major violence. I don't see it spreading. I think they did what they did, they being the U.S. and the Brits, because they wanted an incident, and they got their incident. They got people looking the other way, at least for a while. But I think using the method that they did for distraction was a mistake. You know, the other side of that coin is the whole Middle East could blow up, but I don't think that's going to happen. I do think that in the future, the relations between Israel and its neighbors will change decidedly. And I think that's something that is very possible, but it doesn't mean that Israel is going to have a war with Egypt or Jordan or anybody else. It just means there will be political changes.
Well, I must admit that I completely agree with your assessment. I think there's no doubt that there's been manipulations going on to bolster the protests and to make them even more ferocious. And I think some of those have come out, like last week. The Telegraph was reporting that the American diplomats had been secretly harboring rebel leaders in Egypt who, as far back as 2008, were planning to upset the Mubarak regime before the 2011 elections. So here we are, and here it is. And then, of course, we have the globalist stooge Mohammed al-Baradei waiting in the wings to come in as part of the pre-engineered solution to this crisis which they've created. So I think it's another one of those situations that the globalists love to create, where no matter which side you support, you're supporting the wrong side. You can either support a brutal dictatorial regime, or you can support the globalist stooges who are there to take over from him. And either way, it doesn't really work out. And then there's the third option, I guess, of radicalized Muslim movements taking over in these countries, which will only serve to bolster the existing power structure in the strategy of tension, which we've seen as a key underlying point of the system. So I think, again, it's just such a rock and a hard place type situation. But I think the underlying point, which you made in that as well, is that there is an underlying economics to what's going on here. And the rocketing, skyrocketing prices of food around the world are starting to cause genuine unrest. And there is no doubt that these protests, however much they're manipulated or being directed, are still absolutely a grassroots, I guess, expression of the genuine pain that's being felt around the world as food prices begin to skyrocket. So how do you think that's playing into this? And do you think this is necessarily going to take people's mind off of the economic situation, or actually, in some ways, maybe even bring it back on the economic situation in a different light?
Well, the economic situation from a food, petrol, the viewpoint is going to seethe, and the seething underneath is going to continue. In some nations, it's going to break out, and we've seen that, and it's legitimate, very legitimate. The diversion that this was created for has worked, but it won't work for a long time. Perhaps a month or two, and that's the end of it. I mean, those problems are still there. So you say, what are they going to do next? Well, I don't know that. But I do know that worldwide, you're going to continue to have higher inflation caused by monetary policy, not only in the United States, but in most countries. And you're going to have higher food prices. We're seeing it all over the world. I travel through Latin America, and I see it everywhere. And the inflation is, in some places, is higher than others. America is very high. I pin it right now at 6.75% and rising. The government has it at 1.5%. Where will it go this year in America? Probably 14%, where it was 3 years ago. And the official number will be, that's the CPI figure, will probably be 5.5%, which it was last time. For a short period of time, that inflation was ended by the deleveraging that took place. And that was probably a once-in-a-lifetime event, because people were leveraged, including banks, 100 to 500 to 1. It was incredible. And that is not going to happen again, because the leverage is nowhere near that today. It ranges anywhere from 10 to 100. And usually the 100 is usually among the banks and the brokerage houses and the hedge funds. And so, yes, that is going to continue. And the price of food, because of natural events, we saw a drought in Australia. Now we see the place flooding. We see heavy rains that have caused deterioration of product, wheat in Argentina, and on and on. And besides that, we have a flight to quality, what most people forget about. Money has been coming out of bonds and out of stock markets since 1999. Into commodities, and it's proven to be a very good investment. And the reason it's gone there is it's an asset, and it's a move to what people perceive as being safety. The same is true with gold and silver. And so one of the reasons that commodity prices have doubled, more or less, in the last 9 months is simply because there's a lot of speculative money going into a safe haven, and that's what it's recognized as, into commodities and gold and silver. And it's going to continue. So that means you've got inflation, and then you've got higher prices through speculation for commodities, which means you have more inflation, which means people can't feed themselves because they can't afford it.
Absolutely. And of course, oil is one of the key issues here. You can't talk about the destabilization of Egypt without talking about the Suez and what that's already done to Brent crude, which is now trading over $101. I mean, it's definitely affecting oil prices already. Where do you think oil is going in the next few months?
Well, first of all, in the United States, $90 oil will increase if you add in the increases that are already in the works in other items such as food, you come up with an increased bill of $100 billion loss in buying power that would have gone into someplace else, like maybe buying homes or an automobile, renovating your home, things like that. And so that's been kind of taken out of the system in America and transferred to people who produce foodstuffs and other commodities, including oil. And a lot of the money that's paid for petroleum products goes out of the country. So this, you might call it an exchange that's detrimental to large oil users, which would include China as well as the United States, that doesn't produce enough to meet their needs. In the U.S., it's about 65% of the oil that they use comes from other places. I imagine the percentage in China is even higher. And so there's going to be a movement of money from one place to another, and from China and the United States to is the 35 world oil producers. And of course, the majority would go into the Middle East. And this is going to be something that's going to feed on itself, and it's going to get progressively worse. And there's really no solution except the solution that was available 3 years ago, and again in 1992 for that matter, and that is the purging of the system, getting rid of all the malinvestment, getting rid of all of the bankrupts, such as the big banks in our banking system, the big brokerage firms. They're all bankrupt. They're all keeping two sets of books that's supposed to be legal. I mean, you and I go out and do that, we go to jail. It's incredible what's going on.
Absolutely. Well, elaborate on that for people who don't really understand that, the two sets of books.
Well, what banks have been allowed to do by the United States government, by the Bank for International Settlements, and for the with word from the FASB, which is an accounting organization, they were going to stop corporations, particularly in the financial area, from using two sets of books. That's essentially what it is. And the books on the left are all losers. The books on the right are the winners. And occasionally they'll bring an item from the left-hand book to the right-hand book to start to work off the loss among the gains that are on the right-hand books. And they think it's going to take them 50 years to write them off. So that's the process they're in. It's illegal. They're bankrupt. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. And, you know, you say to yourself, well, how can this happen? Well, it does because there's no rules anymore. And there hasn't been rules for a long time. Wall Street and banking own the Federal Reserve. They don't get information. They don't get inside information. They make the inside information. I was a trader for 28 years that I was a stockbroker when I owned my own firm. And if I was right 55% of the time, I made a good living just trading. I had a big retail clientele as well. When I see J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Bank of America, et cetera, go for 3 months in a row without having one day of losing net trades, it's impossible. Totally and thoroughly impossible. So they're rigging the markets and trying to make enough money to offset these tremendous losses that they have. And they're all bankrupt. And, of course, you're not going to see the other set of books. Nobody in the Treasury Department or in the Federal Reserve wants to know anything. I mean, Mr. Bernanke stood up yesterday at a press conference and says, there's no inflation. I mean, does he live on another planet?
Another
liar.
Yeah, another galaxy, perhaps. It is ridiculous, and we all know the manipulation that goes on with the CPI and other indexes to try to make it appear that inflation is not as rampant as it is, but one can only imagine they can only fool so much of the public for so long with that kind of shenanigan.
It's a very serious situation, and until classically the world financial situation is purged, it's going to go on and deteriorate everywhere. It'll deteriorate on a different scale on each country. It'll depend whether they have natural resources. Let's take Canada and Mexico and compare it to the United States. Usually in Canada, people have short-term loans, 5 years or less, when they buy homes. They don't have a write-off on the ownership of a home in their income taxes. In Mexico, everybody pays cash. And the growth rate in Canada right now is probably close to 5%. And in Mexico this past year, it was 7.5%. America's in a depression. So if you project yourself down the line, you know that these two nations are going to become vulnerable because about 80% of what they produce goes to the United States, most of it in manufacturing. And but in the case of Canada with oil and Mexico as well. And so because they have strong natural resources, even though they will lose a great deal of business to America, maybe 50% of their business, still on the scale of 10, the United States being a 10, which is, we'll say, its worst, like the United Kingdom will be a 10. Europe will probably be 7.5 or an 8. And then Mexico and Canada will probably be a 4 or 5. And so there'll be a gradation of problems as we go forward. Will it come to a head, like so many say, in 6 months to a year? The answer is maybe. I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't really have inside information. I don't have people telling me what's going on in the inner sanctum. But I look at history, and I back into what I see. And the potential for short-term major disruption worldwide, never mind just America, is good. It could very well happen. What is the chance? of it happening 2 or 3 or more years from now, it's also equally as good, in as much as QE2, which other countries are doing as well, I just don't call it that, may become QE3. In fact, I think it will. On this program last May, when I said we're going to have 2 QE2 and QE3, and this is how they're going to do it, 2 months later, everybody started to catch up because they weren't backing into things. People, analysts, economists, tend to zero in on things that are happening like right now. They usually don't try to project themselves the way I do. But anyway, the point is QE3, if it was used by the United States, and a similar thing among other nations, that could extend what we're seeing right now, which is zero growth, but with the $2.5 trillion a year that's spent by the U.S. through the Fed as well as legislature, we might get somewhere between 1% and 3% GDP growth, and it'll go down each time they do it. And that's what's going to happen this year. We're not going to get 3 to 3.25% like we got for 5 quarters last time. This time we're going to get 2 to 2.25%. With QE3, maybe we'll get 1 to 1.5%. We won't know until we get close. But the point is that this is the game they're playing, because there is no other game. There's no way out for these people. They're in a box and they can't get out. They went for it and things are not going the way they would like them to. And so they have all these problems. And eventually the whole thing will go from inflation to hyperinflation to deflation, and they will have their deflationary depression. At which time, they, the people behind the scenes, think that they're going to be able to implement world government. And it's not going to happen because too many people know what they're up to. And they're not going to accept it. They're not going to accept another currency or another dollar as a world reserve currency or an index of currencies unless they're backed by gold. People are just not going to take them, especially the BRIC countries who are accumulating gold. And so their plans are going to be scrambled, and they're not going to achieve what they want, and they're going to be exposed for what they've done. And this is a very sad time for them because they're going to get destroyed, you know, financially and economically. And people like our ex-president who planned a war, he might be hung for treason. There's a lot of things going to happen in the future that are going to be that are going to surprise people. In every program I'm on, I make a point of saying that the people behind the scenes who are running things should read French history in 1788, and they'll find out what's going to happen to them.
Well, yes, and you have made that point on this program as well, and it certainly would be surprising, to say the least, to see a certain ex-president being tried and convicted and hung for treason, but I certainly wouldn't shed any tears if and when that would take place, but I wonder if the people who are really in control of the system would be shedding tears for anyone, let alone people like that. I mean, we know that they're not the ones that are in control of the system, the political puppets that are put there in the presidency and have been for decades now. I think they're expendable in so many ways, and manipulatable and manipulated and blackmailed and all the rest of it. So, again, I wonder if just a crowd of people getting whipped up into a frenzy over these political puppets is what we need when, of course, as you say, we need to purge the system.
Well, they're what we call enablers. These are the people who are paid off. They're usually not people who are politically or philosophically motivated. It's usually just greed and money. And those people, if you look back at just the recent history of the Soviet Union and the fascist governments in Italy and Germany, you'll find that the enablers were the first people who were liquidated. So I think that those enablers are congressmen, our senators, and many others. They should think about their future, because we're catching up to them. The world knows what they're doing, and they're not going to escape this time. Many people escape by time passing and them passing away. Lyndon Johnson's a good example. The Gulf of Tonkin was another event like Iraq and another phony deal. Or FDR lining up the ships in Pearl Harbor when they had the Japanese diplomatic code broken in 1937. Incidentally, that's one of the events that I found out about when I went in counterintelligence that keyed me into saying to myself, my goodness, these people are monsters. And of course, that's why I didn't stay.
Right.
And I went off and did something else. But the point is, that was one of the keys. And they're doing it over and over and over again. They think it's some kind of sort of a game. Well, they're playing with people's lives, 60 to 80% of which they'd like to get rid of, because they think that the world is full of useless eaters.
Well, that's right. And as a former intelligence officer, I think you understand that when those bits of information are discovered and let intelligence officers are able to discover that type of thing, I mean, it is in some way a type of test of whether you'll go along with that and whether you think that's a good thing. And obviously, they have a cadre of people that are compartmentalized in these organizations that don't react like you, me, or anyone listening to this would, with absolute revulsion at the idea that they would allow attacks to occur on their own troops in order to win the greater war, so to speak, and all of those other reprehensible things. And unfortunately, there are people who would go along with that, and those are the types of people they want in the key places at the key times to do the key operations on the key days, like 9/11.
And on the other side of that coin, there's a whole group of people who know what they're doing in Europe and America, and they're not going to let it happen. And that's why you and I do the work that we do, to teach and inform people, to help people understand, people who don't have the equipment that we have, and the background, and the study, and all the things that went into us talking about the things that we talk about. We're here to help people and perhaps save them from a terrible fate. I mean, these people were dealing with the monsters. I mean, this is a criminal syndicate that's been going on for centuries. And it's getting broken wide open. Over 50 years ago, I started this quest, and there were a handful of books you could read that would tell you about the history of what really happened. Economically, politically, socially, financially, and the debacles along the way and why they happened. Today you get hundreds and thousands of books on the subject and DVDs and all kinds of information, and they're getting all over the world. The jig is up, so they say. It's only a matter of time now. How long will it take? How long will these people hold on to power? 2 years, 5 years, maybe even 10 for all I know. But in the final analysis, they're going to lose. It's guaranteed. It's just like them rigging the markets. They can't do it indefinitely, because people will vacate the field. They'll say, I'm not going to play anymore. I mean, the money that I got, that I made, I'll turn it into food. And maybe I'll give it away or something. Maybe I'll buy gold and silver, coins or shares or whatever. But they're not going to play in the system. And that's what's going to make the system break down. And where is the first break going to come? In the gold and silver markets. Paper versus gold. Silver. Physical. That's where it's going to come. the leverage is at least 45 to 1 on the short side of the market, both in the COMEX, the LBMA in London, and in the derivative markets, the option markets, and even in the exchange-traded funds, GLD and SLV, which are working with the COMEX. I mean, you talk about an unholy alliance. When enough physical is demanded, the paper market's going to collapse, and they're all going down. And the people who are involved are going to lose their money. So it's something for you people out there to think about. It's a giant scam.
I certainly 100% agree in the way that this is happening, the way it's playing out, and where it's heading. But I wonder where the hubris comes from the people at the top who think they are going to get away with this. I mean, are they really so inept as to think that this isn't going to collapse in the way that both you and I see this as collapsing?
They think they're smarter than everybody else, and they're not. And they're going to lose. The world is full of bright people. I mean, not 90% of the people, but maybe 10% of the people are extraordinarily bright everywhere. India, Iraq, Uruguay, Mexico City, New York City. There's lots of bright people out there. They're not dumb. They can see what's going on. And when it becomes very evident of what's going on, particularly because we have been able to teach people what to look for and what is going on, then they're going to realize and they're going to act. They're going to do something. I mean, you look at the market today when we're taping. I'm watching the market right now as we speak. And unemployment supposedly is 9%. If you believe that, I have a very nice, sturdy bridge for sale that connects Manhattan with Brooklyn. And if you'd like to buy it, I have it up for sale. It's preposterous to tell people that unemployment is 9%. And at the same time, they're attacking gold and silver to try and make it look like the problems are all over. But over in the right-hand corner, you look and you see the U.S. 10-year note trading at 360. And if it stays there, it's a breakout, which means the 10-year could go to 4 or 4.25%. Those are real interest rates. And as those rates go higher, irrespective of what the Federal Reserve is lending money to the banking system at, in the real world, 90, 95, 98% of the people who use money, borrow it, are going to pay more for it. And that's going to dampen industrial and service activity worldwide, because other bonds will follow the U.S. 10 upward in yield. And of course, when the yield rises, the value of the bond falls. And so you can't fool the people, because there's always an action and a reaction. They put gold and silver down. They lean on the commodities. They prop the dollar. They prop the stock market. And then they attack gold and silver, and they can't control the long end of the bond market. In fact, that's where they've been spending most of their $1.7 trillion they're going to spend this fiscal year, which ends September 30th. And I think they've spent most of it already. Because one of the bankers at the conference in Davos said the Fed has already spent $1.7 trillion. He let the bank, a cat out of the bag. He's the president of Barclays. His name was Robert Diamond. And these are the things they don't tell you. I spotted the Fed in the market in the long end in June So I knew they were already in action before, well, actually a couple of months before, they announced that they were going to have QE2. I could see them doing it. And I'm sure every bond player could too. They're not dumb. They're the smartest of the smart. And so you can do things, but you can't hide them. And everything's going to catch up with them and blow up in their faces.
Well, I'm, I guess, looking forward to that in a certain way, but it's not going to be a pretty event, I think, for anyone. Well, speaking of bombshells from Davos, what did you think about the call for $100 trillion in credit in the next decade from coming out of the World Economic Forum?
They think it's going to go on forever. They think they're going to get away with it. Well, $10 trillion a year spent by all nations to increase liquidity is going to increase inflation. It's going to lower purchasing power, which means that they have a big anchor hanging on every economy, holding it down. They're darned if they do and darned if they don't. There's no way out of this thing. And it's very simple to understand. There's just no way for them to get out without purging the system. Classical economics, Austrian economics. And that's what it's going to come to. I mean, that's why our publication is so popular. We add 500 people a month, and we don't advertise. Why? Because we make it simple so people can understand what's going on. And that's why my ratings are so high. It's just like a school.
Right. Well, we'll put that in perspective for people who don't really understand about newsletters and readership. I mean, what is that compared to other people that are putting out newsletters?
Well, for those who are not spending any money, they lose about 30% of their subscribers a year. And that means they have to regenerate to stay even. And that costs money. Well, I don't have to do that. I just talk to people, put out a product. But the thing is, the product is simple, and everything that people have to know every week is in that publication. It's worldwide. I mean, we use 36 different newspapers. Most of them, of course, are online today, in 6 different languages. And some languages, which is very important, we don't even cover, which is Chinese, or the different dialects of Chinese. And so it's not even a complete compendium of information, but it's a heck of a lot more than you're going to find with any 10 publications put together. And I deliberately keep the price down because I want the people to know throughout the entire world how they're getting screwed. I'm not going to let these people get away with this. And I won't give up, and I'm healthy. I'm 75 years old, and I will do this until I help bury them.
Well, I am definitely looking forward to that. So on that note, are you going to give our listeners a bit of a preview of tomorrow's edition of the newsletter?
Well, the international forecast is about business, finance, economics, social and political issues all over the world. We publish on Wednesdays and Saturdays by email. It runs around 40 pages each time. We have a hard copy that goes out for those who are not on the internet. And everything, as I said, that you need to know each week is in that publication. You can get a free introductory copy by going to theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternational, F-O-R-E, CASTER.com, or to www.intforecaster.com. That's intforecaster.com. For those of you who have questions, we answer everyone. You can email us that address, Bob, B-O-B, at intforecaster.com. Bob at intforecaster.com. Or you can call toll free 877-479-8178. That's 877-479-8178. And you can get a free copy of either the hard copy of the email copy. And they have a special offer there for a free one-year subscription. The deal that they're offering is terrific. You should take advantage of it.
Yes, you should. And if you haven't yet, why haven't you? All right. So what's coming up in tomorrow's edition?
Oh, gosh. Hey, you know something? I lose track of what I put in because I put so much in. And I'm lucky if I can get 2 hours between 4 and 6 a.m. to write every morning. Mm-hmm. And I'm writing about 8 pages twice a week. So I can't remember what I write about until I read it again. Or somebody brings it up and says, well, gee, you wrote about this, and then I'll remember it, you know. But there's so much going on. I mean, I cover so many bases. And it just comes from a lifetime of being in the stock and bond markets, commodity markets, being a broker, owning my own firm, traveling extensively throughout the world, speaking a number of languages. I've been a very fortunate person. God's given me wonderful equipment, we'll call it, and I'm putting it to the best use. At this time in my life, I'm devoting everything I can to exposing what's going on. And the accumulation of wealth is not something I'm interested in because where I'm going, they don't use money.
That's a good way of putting it in perspective and keeping it there, because that's ultimately what it's about. Nobody wins in the end in terms of money. So absolutely. And we're fighting this for causes that are greater than money and greater than personal wealth will ever be. So ultimately the truth will win and the truth will out. And if we didn't believe that, we wouldn't be here. And if you didn't believe that, you wouldn't be listening to us. So, to everyone out there listening, thank you for listening and thank you for supporting the work that we're doing because it makes it possible. And to Bob Chapman, my hat's off to you for continuing to be the dynamo of energy that you are. And, I hope it just does not wind down until you're burying the New World Order in its grave.
Let's give it to him.
All right, Bob Chapman, until next month, I wait with bated breath.
Well, thank you very much, and I will be very happy to be back. And if you ever need me in the meantime, just let me know.